Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 31st on the West Coast, now September the 1st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and let you know, tonight I had Jessica Schaub booked for the show. For some reason, she's not making contact with us, so we can't have her on the show if we can't contact her. I have another guest, however, on standby, and he's a frequent guest here on Evident Footprints, also on many other shows, on regular AM, FM radio, and on the internet, and he is a chemtrail opposition researcher by trade. He is a polymer chemist, and he has also been a risk evaluator and assessor for various types of sensitive projects around the world. And we bring him here again from the wonderful state of Ohio, Dr. Michael Castle. Dr. Castle, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don, and good afternoon, evening, morning, whichever the time zone you might be in.
That's to the listeners.
Yeah.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Well, I listened to a lot of programs today and this evening, and many of them were interesting, and finally I just switched over to a different channel, picked up on a lot of things, you know, lots of things going on, lots of voices out there, don't you think? Lots of voices saying lots of various things in email. It's becoming noticed very clearly that there's something going on with NOAA in the U.S. Navy, and the what looks to be like virtually an attack on all ocean everything. Seriously. Oh, yeah, I mean, fish, yeah. Everything. It's just like there's a the Navy, in fact, talked about doing that with sonar and decimating just millions of creatures. Who knows? Maybe they've already done that. But we thought the oil got them. And then we got a hurricane, and by the way, that is also controlled by that same bunch called National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration under this being called Lubchenco. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, she is nothing but pure communist Russian. Check her out. And she's appointed by this White House. Check her out. One of the mission plans, in fact, because I've known for years doing a lot of chemtrails research on weather manipulation and weather control, everything that they're doing has been illegal for at least 15 years or more. But they develop these data logs, and these data logs, in fact, are generated by NOAA and the staff and the rest of the snakes. In fact, they send this data to Belgium to a very large computer. That computer, in fact, does something called, I'll just make it my word, it collates all this data of weather systems, all this information, meteorological information that's fed into this computer. And guess what? Somebody puts an order in on what they want to happen. You see, we got these five hurricanes, Don. They got four more on the drawing board. Actually, they're on the computer.
Now,
they will use these
about that
consistently.
Information, if I may ask you.
Certainly. What did you ask me?
I said, how did you come about that information? How did you find that information?
Let's see. 2007, I worked real closely with someone who claims to have been with the Department of Energy. And this is not the one that comes to your mind immediately. This is a different person. They were with the federal EPA. They went to DOE. And, in fact, they had certain information about NOAA because I inquired about chemtrails, and I got a flat turn down by anybody that these people had asked at DOE in Washington.
You're speaking of the Department of Energy.
Correct. And they had direct ties into a lot of the programs that were being conducted by NOAA. And one of them was an upcoming 2007 dispensement of a chemtrail cloud over the Arctic. And it was, we've all got copies of this. But that was the entourage into information. And that's when I found out that that's who programs all the weather systems that are going across the entire face of the United States, the North American continent, and also most of Europe, including going down to Australia and all of their drought technology, which we know has been used for such a long time, and they've devastated everything. Over Ohio, we have the same jet stream that's being kept artificially up towards the Arctic Circle. It's very high for summer. And in fact, it is the drought conditions that they've experienced in Australia, but it's just the opposite side of the earth. In those parallels, it's very, very clear that they manipulate these jet streams. I think Truott said something last evening about there being detonation of incendiary devices. Up in the jet stream, and that's supposed to turn it and divert it and deflect it and do those types of things. I don't know about that. I know that they use HARPS, and that information came to me in 2002. And Nick Begich was talking about that very, very routinely. HARP got to finding that now they're using that same technology of the HARP wave to manipulate the jet stream. They do that by creating a TOW, if you will, T-O-E, or T-O-W, excuse me, a T-O-W underneath this, but it creates a low-pressure gradient because they can deflect and move these aerosols into a direction and a velocity, and it creates a very high vacuum wind or a low-pressure gradient that pulls and pushes and pulls these jet streams whatever way they want. So I know they've got more than one way of manipulating it, and you can see what they've got now. So all of these configurations of weather systems are being generated by the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, and the National Hurricane Center in Miami is just one faction. The one that's creating the real big mess here is the one at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. In Dayton.
In Dayton, Ohio.
Yes. It seems to me that Dr. Ott and I discussed the issue of the Gulf jet stream somewhat very recently, and how this was an aspect of not just the use of this knowledge and these technologies for purposes of war, but to be used against the masses to take out certain areas of population to murder people. This was being done from the west moving east. He described it going as far north and east as Michigan. Are you aware of any other areas that this concerted spraying of deadly components that were swept into the jet stream have been used aside from chemtrails?
We've known for quite some time. I wrote in my 2003 The Methodic Demise of Natural Earth white paper. It's called Wells Back Seeding, and they claim to have put thorium, which was also a topic of someone just recently, can't remember all these people, but they said it as a metal, it in fact is very valuable, and it could create so much more energy than uranium. I mean, on a scale of tons versus megatons almost. But thorium was something that I'd done a lot of research on way back when, and I know that that is one of the direct roots and causation of extreme AHD, a deficit disorder, and cases of autism in a range. Now, this range starts on the East Coast of Canada, in East Coast of America, and it stretches all the way over the West Coast, about 500 miles north, actually on a trajectory that runs from east to west. Mm-hmm. It's about 700 miles in its pathway. They sprayed that so much with these Wells-Back seeding refractory agents that contain thorium, which has at least a 2% radioactive component. And no one had any clue as to why they, in fact, were spraying in that region. And they claimed because the patent was able to direct low emissivity infrared back into space. And I just can't tell you what a fraud that is, because they cannot prove it. But the patents themselves talks about this being dispensed in the high stratosphere. There you have one, at least an admission of a chemtrail, and one that is not only toxic, but the thing is radioactive. But then years later, in 2008, we found out that this, whoever was supplying the thorium, could have been getting cheap on us, and decided they wanted to possibly adulterate their thorium mixtures, their refractory agents, with depleted uranium. So it goes from one bad thing to something 5 to 10 times as bad because of uranium and gamma radiation and the effects that that has. It's very slow. And how many times have I wrote other people that I know around the Gulf of Mexico to get them to get a Geiger counter and start checking everywhere? Look on the plants. You know, they get this residue, this white, I called it a white fluffy crystal. Mm-hmm. That's what this stuff is. It's a white fluffy crystal. Something tells me there's something in there besides benzene in a very high molecular weight fraction with ethylene oxide from core exit. But, Don, there's something really screwy about the way this burns through vegetation. Very, very odd. I'm just asking, if you got a Geiger counter, please go out and start doing some checking around. I think we've got a problem. On the heels of some of the other discussions that have been very present, like on True Share last night about uranium, I heard on Jeff Renz this evening, he had a gentleman on there again talking about cobalt and the proliferation of this into our skies and atmosphere everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it is something that we just, in fact, presume or assume, sometimes as ignorant as we are, trusting these people at anything. But we, in fact, entrust that they've got it enclosed, they've got it guarded, that the Department of Energy has done their job and, in fact, completely contained this and shut it down, and it's not going to get out. And that is such a lie, it is not funny. And I just heard someone else this evening on Jeff Renz's show claim very much the same thing. It is all these reactors leak gas, radioactive gases. Mm-hmm. As this gentleman said, they're designed to leak this radiation. Well, not only do we have a benzene problem and a lot of other contaminants in the air, doesn't include the ones that they're putting in the air, but then there are the fugitive emissions, which are coming off of these reactors and these stores and radioactive stores of waste materials from depleted uranium and all of it. So if someone out there has a Geiger counter, I'd be very, very interested in what the readings are outside of a base grounding of radiation. Just like to know. I'd just like to see if, and I can only say I wish I had a Geiger counter. I never knew I needed one, but I think I do now.
Yeah, I happen to do read a little bit of a story to the listening audience last night from north of Tampa Bay, Florida. There is a family that got sick after going in their swimming pool. They live an hour away from Tampa and
Homosassa Springs.
Yes, exactly. They got measurements of 50.3 parts per million of 2-butyoxyl ethanol, which is one of the main ingredients in Corexit 9500. They named, I'm trying to remember the name, if it was 950A or something like that, was a modified solution of Corexit, and it also had arsenic in it. I think it was like 0.02%.
I've seen that.
Or 0.02 of, 1% parts per million. So I don't think many people are aware that they're putting arsenic in their swimming pools as regular maintenance programs, you know, for chlorination and filtering of the system.
Keeps the algae down.
It keeps a lot of things down. Don't throw your koi in there.
I've seen it. If you see where Homosassa Springs is located, that is, in fact, on a straight line coming right off the Gulf of Mexico, of course, on the west coast around Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been reports down there before of U.S. Coast Guard aircraft actually using the cover of night for spray operations.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
I definitely heard that.
Well, I would contend that that is where your Corexit is coming from in your swimming pool. It could be coming from condensation and fog and rain. And now we've got another agent down there. It looks like, see, I was talking with some other people here just in the last couple of years about keep their eyes open for and their ears open for something that would be almost akin to rupturing of blood vessels about what they're talking about with what happens with Corexit. But I'm talking about something that is a viral contagion because we know that they had weaponized Ebola. And in fact, I had heard that this was done with the aid of being able to bring a form of almost a mutated fungal form to begin with. But they've somehow or another been able to create the same exact identical symptoms of dengue fever. So you've got to weaponize something that appears to be very, very closely associative with wet precipitation, high levels of fog, dew, and those types of things. These are not mosquitoes, mind you. People are getting this thing down in southern Florida. I'd like to hear from somebody down there, but we know we definitely got reports down there of something that was like dengue fever. Now, that immediately brings up a subsidiary company that owns an entire fleet of Gulf 9 jets with the eductor systems, the spray eductor systems, which are capable of putting out biological agents into the atmosphere. And that's the only reason these aircraft are outfitted down in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And it's a big company, too. I just seen where they get routinely hundreds of millions of dollars in grants for various types of things that they can't tell you what they are.
Are these research grants or these are for manufacturing?
As a matter of fact, I did see the word R&D, research and development.
Yeah.
And I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's just, you go down through the list on the contractors and what they get and how heavily every congressman that's in this state has been involved in this stuff. Every senator has been involved in this stuff. They are still involved in this stuff. It just doesn't end. I mean, on top of everything else, why do you think I continue to call them nothing more than mere corporate agents? That's all they are. I've got no interest in trying to send them something because I can assure you T-Berry's not going to answer my questions, nor is Kucinich.
Yeah.
I've only given them 8, 9, 10 years now. Not one word. Not one word.
Yeah, no.
Well, what they're hiding.
You mentioned dengue fever, and I think there's something out there that goes into that a little bit more, but that's a disease that's been attributed to mosquitoes, and it's a viral disease that is very debilitating. It'll give a person a very severe and sudden fever, and they'll also experience extreme pain in their joints, and that can be fingers, wrists, elbows, shoulders. I've heard of people describe pain in the rib cage. Even breathing becomes a real travail for them, and that in the process of going through this disease, I've heard people say, "I know there's a God, because if this hit both of my ribs, the rib cage area, and basically the ribs have cartilage, which allows them to sort of expand and contract as a person is breathing. So, you know, there's a bony structure there, and yet it's able to move in somewhat a different way than some of the other skeletal regions of the body. But you can imagine if you're feeling this in your toes and your feet and your ankles and your knees, your hips, all the way up to the top of your head, even in your neck. It's excruciating for some people that have the severe cases of that. Now, that certainly could be something added to chemtrails or sprayed in swamp areas. We've heard reports of the oil and the Corexit 9500 reaching the swamplands in the Gulf region. So if they're actually spraying these areas, and we don't know that for sure, but there seem to be cases of fever, and even the Corexit itself is something to behold when you hear all the gastrointestinal issues, the hemorrhaging. And you mentioned in a roundabout way, you referred to hemorrhaging. Were you referring to the Corexit or these other viruses?
Both. Actually, yeah, the Corexit, that's known about 2-butoxyethanol anyways, that are it causes impaction of the blood vessels itself, hemorrhaging to some degree. I don't know what extent, but I do know that this weaponized form of Ebola virus, Ebola with some other bacterium, some other viral contagion, a mutated fungal form, whatever they've put together, whatever kind of Frankenstein Hydra monster they've got there. But this stuff, in fact, can harbor itself in the dew. It can make you very sick because that can actually be dispensed from low-level clouds. Low-level clouds are around 10,000 feet, 10 to 15,000 feet. Low-level clouds, in fact, that I can only equate them, they look like fuming clouds, and they seem like they're double-deckers. And they dehydrate everything as they come through.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the process of doing that, they're being sprayed with something above them, which is causing them to boil and react.
Mm-hmm.
there's the association with these people that I've looked at some of the things that have came across this screen that they've associated with going out into that, into a fog in the early morning. And man, did they ever get sick, and nobody would listen to them, that they said, no, I just went outside and I got in this fog and I got sick. I got extremely sick.
Yeah. Now, in Ohio, in the last, the past month, we've had almost steady temperatures in the 80s, and today in the mid-90s. And we haven't had the oppressive humidity that we often get in the summertime. But I'd say it's about 10 days ago. I'm gonna go back to a week ago Saturday. That there was this phenomenon that you just described on a hot night. It was still in the low 80s after sunset, and say around 11:30 at night. That would have been I'm going to say Saturday, the 21st of August, and the clouds seemed to be just at the tree line, at the average mm-hmm. tree line, okay? Is mm-hmm. that something what you're describing?
Yes.
How the system is driven down, and it appeared like a fog. Now, it was too warm for that to have occurred.
Yes.
Normally, fog is produced when the cooler air comes in and the ground is warm. That will produce a fog.
Radiation fog.
Yes. Right. This was quite a bit different. There was nothing at the ground level, but up about treetop level, you could see this system just pressing itself down toward the ground for miles. And we had a complete obscuring or a complete obfuscation, you like that word, of what might have been a starry night on the opposite side of those clouds. We didn't have any precipitation, which was interesting because it looked like that. Now, in the morning, there were spots on many people's vehicles, little droplets, little spots on the windshields, and you could see it all anywhere that where you could get a decent reflection of sunlight. Next day, it was clear, by the way, you know. Mm-hmm. But this all occurred at night, while most people were at home sleeping and or inside a building where they weren't seeing what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking for a patent number right now, and I've not said a word to you about that, but I've been looking. I'm looking for the U.S. patent number that is probably, obviously, co-invented by USA Corp and some other corporation. But it's the one that talks about aerosolized particulate instead of the straight line, the linear lines of chemtrails, you know, when they spray them. And in fact, from these, we've got photographs of them spraying this stuff from other jets right above them. So I don't want to hear anything about something being called a slow, I can't even remember those words. I mean, because they're so ridiculous. They're chemtrails.
Well, like slow spreading contrails.
Right. I mean, they look like, when they come up to the jet, they look like they're a piece of bacon unfolding, you know, and frying. But they've replaced that, I think, Don. I'm looking for the one
that
talks
about. Number 633-3023.
I don't know.
Try that number. Just put in patent 633-3023. And see if that's not it.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll do that.
This is interesting because they mentioned it's assigned to the Glaxo Group Limited.
Really?
In Greenford, Great Britain, yes. Now, we don't know that that's the number. It's aerosol formulation containing particulate formaterol, propellant, and polar co-solvent. Maybe I found something else that we didn't know about.
No, that's interesting. But I'm looking for the one that you've heard them describe. They call them black chemtrails. They're very dark. As a matter of fact, somebody got a photograph of one chemtrail jet that, in fact, had the essence of a white chemtrail coming out of one side and a black chemtrail coming out of the other. Now, I don't know where that photograph went. This has been a year or so ago. So there's always been the question, what are the black chemtrails? Actually, those are a new model because there's been too much observation of this particular tactic, and they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop spraying these toxins and poisons in the sky. But I found out that that black really is almost an ultramarine blue, a very, very dark ultramarine blue.
Mm-hmm.
When they put these into the atmosphere at a higher altitude, you can't see them. As a matter of fact, the day that you described as being clear,
mm-hmm.
you have almost this backdrop of azure blue, blue
yeah.
sky.
Yeah.
I've got binoculars, and I've got a couple of filters that I use just for myself and my observation from where I'm at. And I look, and I send this obscuration. It actually looks like puddles of dark stuff that, in fact, are embodied in this thing. If you take the glasses away and look straight up at it, it's as clear as it can be. You think it is until you look at it closely. They've got something else into the atmosphere. These are the chemicals that, in fact, contain the heavy dryers, the desiccants. These are more of the potassium dibromide, the potassium bromides, the ethylene dibromides, and those types of chemistries that, in fact, create these very dehydrating cycles, just like they did in Australia. And they dried everything up. And everything that kept inhaling these would cause rashes. Incidentally, it's the same exact chemistry that they used for fire retardancy. So all the things that are associated with that and all the things that they put those in, yes, you're going to have the same type of syndromes. But again, these are these clouds that tend to come through and dehydrate everything. But they also contain a moisture that's just full of something really, really toxic, Don. I don't know how to describe this, but they've changed the entirety of these things by drying everything up, sucking up all the moisture. I'd gotten reports, somebody on the East Coast, in fact, said up by Canada, were just talking about this very topic, and they said, hey, does anybody know why it seems to rain, and within an hour you can go outside, and it's just as dry as a bone?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what clued me. They've got active desiccants in the atmosphere, and I think they've went to a desiccant that, in fact, is translucent or translucent at the most. But see, it's got no reflectivity. That's what they've been able to omit. And I did find a patent where they put a microscopic coating, if you will, which essentially gives it a flatting effect. It's a super type of flatting technology, a film flatting technology with color. And the difference is when you broadcast these, they don't glint. They don't capture any light. They don't create a Tyndall effect. What you see on those clear days, and I did observe that, at sunset, it just seems like the entire horizon had a halo around it where you could see this white particulate Tyndall effect, but none over top of you. It went to the horizon. And there's a clue that the air is full of something because you're looking at it because it's a different angle of refraction that you're getting from the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So I know they've got something in these clear blue days, and I think it's a colored, almost invisible crystal type of aerosol that in essence is going to do the same thing. It's going to scavenge moisture. But they're also doing this in conjunction with all these other poisons that they're putting in the air. Obviously, aluminum being one of those. And again, Don, it's just I can only, in fact, make observations based on things that I know that people have worked on, and they've worked on every single one of these types of aspects of disguising the chemtrails, and here we are. And I think these are the new models that they've got out, and we're not supposed to, in fact, notice those because they're supposed to be relatively invisible. You're not supposed to be able to notice. If you see those things that look like twin clouds, you see clouds in about 10,000, 15,000 feet in here, and they look like two crescent rolls bonded together.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe one's got like a billowing at the one end of it, a billowing maybe at the other end. They've got like twin clouds stuck together, and they're billowing. It looks like horns or something. Those are the ones I'm talking about. They've recreated the way these machines work. And I think that they're even more deadly than what they were doing before. I really do.
Yeah. Now, there's another phenomenon that I wanted to mention to you, which is very similar to what you're talking about. And I'm wondering if you've heard about this. I'm trying to recollect if I actually brought this out on a past show with one of my guests, or maybe it was just a conversation I had with someone. But what I found out is that as I was watching maybe 20 chemtrail planes spraying in different directions, some of the planes were flying sort of northeast to southwest, and others were flying just east to west or west to east. Some were flying from the northwest to the southeast. You get the idea. They were making X's and crisscrosses and intersecting each other's lines almost in an erratic manner. And there was a plane that seemed to be, I would guess it was at about 40,000 to 45,000 feet. I saw no commercial flights. These appeared to be military planes. And there was, as I was looking at the tail of the stream that this plane was spraying, and it was staying in the air. It wasn't a contrail. It was on a warm spring day, early part of spring. And as this plane was, I couldn't tell you how many miles away it was. It was difficult to tell because of how high it was. But let's say it was 30 to 40 miles away. And there was still approximately one-third of the sky visible until that plane reached the horizon, okay? Now, you can imagine at the height that it was, or the altitude that it was at, that there was sort of an arc to the chemtrail. It was a straight line, but it was following the curvature of the Earth, okay? Mm-hmm. And in front of the plane, what I saw was, and I questioned if this was an optical illusion, and I assure you it wasn't. As long as I looked at it, and in fact, I moved my position to another vantage point, and I could still see the same effect. If you followed the curve of the chemtrail behind the plane and looked in front of the plane, you could basically see the direction that the plane was going to take if you followed that line through the sky, which was an arc. And in front of the plane was a black line that ran all the way to the edge of the horizon. And that had an arc to it, too. And as I watched the plane fly, it flew along the path of that black line. I'd never witnessed anything like that before, but I sensed that there was some sort of electromagnetic radiation being emanated from the front of the plane, as if that plane was being flown remotely, and this path actually appeared. This pathway appeared as if it was flying along a grid. That's the best way I can describe it. Mm-hmm. Can you picture what I'm telling you about?
Yeah, absolutely, I can, and yes, I've seen one.
Okay, so either we both saw an optical illusion, or we've discovered some technology that's being used to fly these planes. Maybe pilotless, like mm-hmm. drones.
Yeah, those are aerial platforms. I wrote about that in The Methodic Demise. They are aerial platforms. There's no humans in those. And did you notice that plane was flying across the sky? He was really booking. He was really hauling. That's what we noticed. But I did have a pair of binoculars. And I also noticed this. It seemed like the entire front cabin of the aircraft, that part of the appendage of the aircraft itself, in fact, seemed to be like encased in some kind of black tube. That's the only thing I can describe it as, was a black tube. So you really couldn't make out the front of the aircraft, but I could see it possibly better than what you just described being 30, 40 miles away. But it was just moving at such breakneck speed. You know, I mean, it was moving away at a distance, at an angle, but I was still able to see that. So I was talking with Clifford Carnicom on the telephone way back when, many years ago. We get to talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't draw any significant conclusion, because he had seen the same thing, somewhat the same way that we've all described it. And that's why I told him that I found information some of these things I read through the years, that they were able to fly these aircraft beyond the point in time that you were looking at them. They were flying like 7 seconds ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
That always confuses people. And I don't know how Clifford Carnicom handled that. I forget. But I just know that I was talking to him about that and the black chemtrails as well. So we never really came to do a deducement, if you will, of whatever this was. And you bring it up again. But it's been actually filmed in one of these chemtrails videos that I've seen. Somebody actually was able to capture that black line in front of that aircraft. Yeah, so it's a lot of people have seen it.
You know, you could describe it, if it was an airplane on a string, you were seeing the plane being pulled by
yes.
the string, okay, or
yeah.
following that, as if it was a track, okay?
Like a track, exactly.
And my feeling was that, you know, using my discernment, my feeling was I was seeing something I wasn't supposed to see,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I even rubbed my eyes just to make sure that, you know, I wasn't imagining this. Now, I want to insert something here. I'm getting some chat messages from some of the Wind Talkers who are listening to us. And we have a Wind Talker station in Phoenix that's just sent me a link to a YouTube video, and I've paused the video with the sound off so it wouldn't interfere with your description, and I'm looking at the multicolored chemtrails. Okay? Now, we've never seen multicolored contrails, have we? I don't think anyone has.
Just in those, I think it was the same thing about, well, this was actually Texas, rainbows and chemtrails. I think the name of it was rainbows.
But I'm saying, just, you know, for those out there that want to say, no, those are contrails, I'm looking at multicolored chemtrails, not contrails. Okay? And I'll make sure I send you these links. You're going to want to take a look at this. So we thank our Wind Talker network out in Phoenix. And I have to repeat something I said on a few shows over the past 3 years. I think Phoenix, Arizona, in fact, the area from Prescott to Phoenix, Arizona, on Christmas Eve 2006 was the most, let's say, concentrated and prolific spread of chemtrails I have ever seen. And, you know, when you're out in the desert, especially out west, you can see for miles and miles and miles. Normally, the skies are clear. On a good day, flying in an airplane, you can see for 65 miles. That's a given. And, of course, you can't see that in more congested areas. Los Angeles, you're lucky if you can see 65 feet on a smoggy day. And I have to tell you that by the time I got to the Phoenix airport, you could not see across the street. And I asked myself, how can people live in this? You tend to think maybe they're being told this is smog, but if you were seeing what we saw in a 2-hour drive, the checkerboard patterns and the X's, horizontal, vertical, curved, circular patterns throughout the sky. Tons of jets up there just chemtrailing away like it was going to go out of style on Tuesday. And so I know that the people, and I've talked to many people in Phoenix since then that tell me, yeah, it's pretty, not just in Phoenix, all around Arizona, it's a pretty common event. So you wonder how many people are getting sick. This was in the winter time, okay? Christmas Eve was a chilly day there. I can say that much. But the sun was shining or trying to shine, but you couldn't see. Standing at near the front entrance of the airport, you couldn't see across the street. And there's actually, you know, where they have the passenger drop-off area for cars and buses. I think it's about four lanes, and there's a walkway that's over that passes over the street for people inside the terminal to possibly go to parking. And even under that walkway area, you literally couldn't see across the street from the other side, four lanes. That's how prolific that was. That's not an exaggeration. I didn't want to stay out there very long. So, but when you went inside the building and looked, they have huge glass windows at that entrance. You can see everything that's going on out in the street. You can see from inside about halfway across the street. You can see about two lanes of the traffic and just totally covered up.
And barely see the street lights. Or the runway lights or the airport lights. I mean, no, it's the same thing. What you just described, I've seen myself in Las Vegas a lot. You said Phoenix. Well, Las Vegas, in fact, 2004. I was there in 2004 and 5. I'm not certain about the rest of it. But I remember the last time I was there, I was doing that interview with Nicholas Jones. He's the one that wrote the, after that interview, he wrote peanut butter and barium sandwiches, and that became one of the lead articles with Barium Blues, which he wrote. And I know Ken Adachi picked that up and ran it for quite some time. But that was that trip there that you could go out outside of the hotel anywhere in Las Vegas, and you literally could not see across the street, and everything was fuzzy. You know, if you looked at headlights, or the globe on a street lamp, it was the same thing. Just put your eyes off, you know. What am I trying to say? Not obstruct, but look to the side of the light, not directly at it. And you can actually see a very, very large globe around that entire area, right with. There's no rain, no precipitation, nothing. It's just that there's the same type of, like, almost mica flake stuff that you see, that we used to see when we were in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the Sunday over in Dayton, Ohio, or anywhere in those areas at nighttime. They have a mall that's not too far from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I kid you not, Don, it was the same thing, because they flew so many aircraft in and out of there, both manned and unmanned, out of Dayton. And, of course, when they would spray these aerosols, they wouldn't shut them off. They would just, in fact, run out of their cargo and, in fact, land.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people got sick because they didn't know that that was what they were breathing virtually 24 hours a day. It permeates everything, unless you've got some way of cleaning it from the air and outside of something wet. I'm not certain how you do that, because it doesn't respond to electrostatic type of diffusion. It's all positively charged, and it just doesn't really... it's designed to be aerodynamic, to stay up in the atmosphere for a long, long period of time, but the ground fall does finally get to the ground, and more than likely, if you're standing in that area at that ground fall, you're going to inhale it. And then when it goes into your lungs, the old style where the barium and the aluminum were just like glass shards. They were just like shards of the metal itself, the carbonates, in fact, and the aluminum, in fact, were very, very sharp. They looked like little arrowheads.
Now, we're looking at these under a scope or a microscope or...
A very, very strong magnification. It was not a scope, though.
Okay.
Like a ring scope, if you will. I mean, you could see them with a good contrast background. You could see them with varying angle of lights. I mean, you're talking about something that's very, very small, a micron. I mean, you know how that's not even a speck.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see that they've got that characteristic style of being very, very aerodynamic, and that's why they look like little shards of glass, is because they, in fact, would stay aloft and very, very aerodynamic. They would continuously pick themselves up in updrafts. But when you inhaled them, that would also pierce the lung, the bronchial, as well as the alveoli in the lung itself, and everyone's oxygen level, in fact, would go down almost by 0.75% or more. And that's relatively serious. Oxygen deprivation just by breathing? Well, why breathe if, in fact, you're not going to get any oxygen? I guess the fish were asking that question about the water they were trying to breathe down there in the Gulf of Mexico with all the corax in it and the ethylene oxide and the 2-butoxyethanol. And, in fact, one of them's miscible with water and the other one's not. And, in fact, when you get them together and they coat gills on a fish, the fish cannot get oxygen from the water.
Well, if it
shuts it down.
Yeah, and if it's causing hemorrhaging and they're breathing through their gills, the gills begin hemorrhaging, the fish is going to
die.
Drown in its blood or be asphyxiated.
Correct.
This is
same thing with breathing air and us.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. After a while, relent to, I mean, when your oxygen level goes down in your body, your aerobic level goes down, so does everything else. Your immune system, your immune response system, everything goes down because you can't survive without oxygen. That's why I believe these are not beings such as us doing this. These, in fact, are from a different sector. They're from somewhere else because they don't require as much oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to interrupt here for a second if I can.
Sure.
And I wish I could show you these. I could, but it might interfere with the quality of our call. So,
just describe it.
I'm going to refrain from it, but I got some photos from Jane in Arizona that she took over Chandler, Arizona, back on November 7th of 2007. And she's got a huge X in the sky. Of course, there are some trails that are at a much higher altitude and they have spread out and become sort of fuzzy, ethereal. It actually looks to me like sylphs are eating those up, to tell you the truth.
Hmm.
And then she's got a big X. In the second photo, she's showing what appears to be a close-up of the same X, part of it, with another jet flying parallel, almost flying on top of the original trail, but at a much higher altitude. So it's they're laying multi-layered patterns, we'll say, sort of a three-dimensional grid, if you want to use that term, following the same pattern at maybe above the jet stream, I'm going to say, from the sides of the plane. But the plumes are still there. They haven't gone away. These are not chemtrails. And normally, a contrail will remain somewhere between 3 to 5 times the length of the plane as you see the tail end of the contrail evaporating.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as that heat is lost, that condensation disappears. So this is more documented proof. I mean, we've seen thousands of these photographs, but it's always interesting to see the different phenomena, the different methodologies that are being used and how these are applied. Mm-hmm. And the ignorance of the average individual that works for the government is staggering, particularly fire departments. And I've related the story on a couple of shows where we had a local transformer can that's attached to a telephone pole and the electric line running to a house from that transformer caught fire. The transformer overheated, caught fire, was spewing out sparks and flames, and the fire actually ran along the electrical line and ignited the house. The house caught fire. We were without electricity that whole day. And the fire department basically camped out right in front of my house. Hmm. And while we're standing out there watching this, and people are moving their vehicles, so the fire department had more access to bring in more trucks and hook up to the fire hydrants all up and down the street. I had the opportunity to hand some water to the firemen that were standing in my driveway, and I look up and I see them spraying X's in the sky. And I asked one of the guys, what's that up there? And he said, oh, those are contrails. And I said, contrails, what's the temperature today? I think we had something like a 97 degree temperature that day, which contributed to the fire in that transformer can. And I said, in 97 degree weather, you have contrails at 10,000 feet. That doesn't make sense. Are you sure you know what you're talking about? And he says, well, you tell me what it is. And I told him. And he said, oh, you got to be kidding. You're nuts. And I said, yeah, that's the typical response of the ignorant. But
that is. That is.
But it's your job to know these things.
Well, yeah, and not to mention that if that was an old transformer, that smoke coming out of there, in fact, was PCBs, polychlorinated mm-hmm. biphenyls. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, no doubt.
And that stock, that has dioxin in it.
Yeah, it stunk to high heaven too.
Oh wow, yeah. That's got live dioxin. Live, that's got dioxin in it. That's one of the principal sources of dioxin is when somebody starts burning old transformers to get the copper out of them, like they did down in Lemon Landfill down in Bloomington, Indiana. Been that place many, many times. Going to Indiana University and going to the landfills around there and seeing they used to have that company that made just millions and millions. It was a Westinghouse, I believe it was Westinghouse Corporation. Millions of transformers, and of course they closed the business because it was the entire area had been contaminated with PCBs.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the old transformers down to a landfill. Of course, somebody in fact encouraged them to strip the scavenge the copper out of them, so they would take and just light the things off and wait till they burnt. Then they would go back later on and just knock the copper out of them. These huge copper coils. But they would also, in fact, take old abandoned farmhouse wells and, in fact, pour the oil down in the well so nobody would, in fact, say, hey, what's this stuff here? Well, that's how they got oil PCBs right underneath the karst limestone formations that go strewn out through Indiana. And 50 miles away, they would find PCBs underneath the karst limestone in the water table. Am I still on the air, Don, or did
yes,
I?
Yes, you are. I'm listening.
I just heard a whoosh, whoosh. So I'm thinking, what happened there?
I don't know.
Well, PCBs, strange. In fact, can generate, when you burn them, they form dioxins, and in fact, they're very, very toxic. Very, very toxic. But anyways, back to your chemtrails. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Nobody is going to, in fact, glom onto this, and I've tried for years, and that's the one thing that I've said about Ron Paul, since he's been in the limelight as possibly someone who's straight, defies the corporate agent label that I've given every one of these other people that are elected. But even Ron Paul refuses to comment to any of my emails to him or John Tate, which runs Campaign for Liberty or where that organization is, you know, will not write me back one word, and I just keep asking the same questions. How are you going to stop the chemtrails and when? That's the only question I ask. If anyone out there thinks that they've got a real connection, I don't care who to, within the government, bring me back proof positive that they acknowledge that there are such things as chemtrails being sprayed on us every single day. Just go ahead. You think you're really good with these people? Get them to talk about that, and then let me know who it is. I'll make you a bet of a glass of good lemonade, if I can get it to you. Really good natural lemonade that you will not be able to get them to respond to that particular question with that word in it. And I don't care how you explain that word. You can call it anything you would like to call it. You can avoid calling it chemtrails if you want to. You can use one of these other fluffy words, if you will, or less politically incorrect words, if you like. Doesn't make any difference.
Looms.
Yeah, just let me know if they respond to your question. Why doesn't Ron Paul respond to this? Why doesn't T-Berry respond to this? Why doesn't Dennis Kucinich, of all people, respond to this with letters I sent to him personally?
Well, you would think the short-legged Mac Daddy, with all the vacations and all the golfing he does, would question it, wouldn't you? You know,
I can tell you, it's been my impression that he's 1,000% behind all of this, because,
of course,
I think it is part of the grand plan, in fact, to decimate 80% or more of all life forms on this planet within 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a recent show, I talked about, in fact, this was on Drew Raines, A Marine's Disquisition.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2 weeks ago. I did a follow-up on the work of Jeff Wefferson and Lisbeth Verstraeven, who you're familiar with.
Yes.
They've been basically showing all the 1080 spraying that's going on down under, and I've got a couple of video clips. I mean, they're horrific. It just breaks your heart to see these animals suffering, and there were some tourists from Brazil who had written an expose on this. They were furious. They were told how wonderful and how clean and sunny and just how much they were going to enjoy hiking and being out in nature on their vacation. And they were actually sprayed upon by the planes that were spraying this 1080, which is an herbicide. Now, of course, the government denied that they they even come close to these trails, and the people got a direct hit. So, and they became very ill. The woman's husband was already suffering from a debilitating set of diseases, asthma being one of them, and this just exacerbated all of the problems that that he was having. And this is they're admitting that they're spraying 1080, but they're not admitting where they're spraying it. Now, why would somebody be spraying any kind of herbicide over the lands that they don't own, that are public lands? Why would they be doing that? Why do you think? What do you say about that?
Because they have a contract. That's just like spraying right here in Ohio with what they're calling around this town, the capital city. They call them adulticides. Now, they don't call them, isn't that cute, adulticides? Well, is this supposed to kill all the adults? No. No, but it's some type of insecticide that is, in fact, designed to be sprayed out of a truck, like a pickup truck with something riding in its freshly rhinoed, black rhinoed, pickup area, the truck area, in fact, that sprays these twin nozzles, and it's supposedly Bernie, which is Al Whitney's better half, in fact, has done some study on this and done some really good protest on it here locally to get them to stop spraying it. There's no reason whatsoever. They will not answer his questions on why they're spraying it, other than the fact that these people have got a contract to spray it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason they spray it, is because they've got a contract. Well, I woke up one Saturday and walked out on the back porch, and guess what? My wife, in fact, informed me that they sprayed that morning, just as before she was leaving for work, and you could see this mist all over. It goes 150 feet in both directions from where they're spraying it at. And this is just a very, very fine fog, aerosolized mist, if you will, of pure insecticide. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any difference if it harms you or not. Doesn't make any difference if it in fact lights on a mosquito. But it kills everything else in its path, not just mosquitoes. Everything else, butterflies, bees, all these things are affected, and these people have got zero responsibility for it. So to answer your question, why did they spray that 1080 down there? Because they had a contract.
Yeah. Well, I guess it'd be the same answer as to why they're spraying Corex at 9,500 or
right.
Or chemtrails or anything else.
Right. They got a contract, and many of these are federally approved contractors, and they're big ones, too.
Now, going back in 2006, in the northwest of the United States, in regions like Washington State, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, I heard numerous accounts of the deer, the elk, the antelope, and other critters that were succumbing to mysterious spraying that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
These animals were either sick or already dead when they were found, and suffering a similar type of hemorrhaging like the 1080 causes. It's just heart-wrenching to see what 1080 does to an animal that just merely eats what it thinks is its normal food, or if it's been sprayed upon or inhales, gets a few breaths of that spray as it's coming down, to see what these animals go through. People's domestic pets, dogs and cats, are also dying from this at their home. So they're not just spraying along certain areas where they claim to be using this to get rid of parasites or pests, insects or whatever. This is population control. That's what it's about.
Of more than just humans.
Yes, that's true. They're just assaulting every life form that there is on the planet, in the water, in the sky. Of course, birds are succumbing to this as well. But the whole food chain is disrupted by this.
Yes.
You know, in nature, from the plants all the way through the animals. And it's at some point it's going to affect the people. Well, I tell you, we've got a huge listening audience tonight. We've got a lot of people that are really responding to the show. And this wasn't even planned. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, my guest didn't make it. But we're going to have to continue this again. We're out of time, unfortunately. But
thank you, Don. Appreciate the show tonight.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. I sent you those links, and I've got a couple other goodies to send you. Thanks to Jane in Arizona. Thank you, Jane. She took some video and some stills of some activity in her area. So,
well, we'll take a look at them, and one of these days we'll have to do another show. Right soon. But I want to keep putting that question in front of everybody, Don.
Sure.
What about this? This is all reality. They are doing this, not only in the air, but also in the oceans. They're poisoning the land. They're poisoning the water. What about this? The only thing anybody can think about is elections. Yeah, go ask them. Go ask the corporate agents what they think about this and demand an answer. Thank you for your time, Don. You have a good day today.
Well, you too, and I want to thank you for being on the show and let the listeners know that you will be back on Evident Footprints in the month of September. Can you believe it? September's here already.
Wow.
So we want to thank all the listeners out there and those with the network that are sending us links, photos, videos, and we will talk about this some more. I do want to bring up one quick thing here before we go off the air, too. And that's on 9/11. I got several mainstream news feeds. Some of them were from Fox, showing unusual angles of WTC number 1 and 2 prior to their being pulverized into dust and molten metal. And there were a few flying saucers in the air. There have been many anomalies that have been researched, analyzed, and documented in some recent videos. And these aren't fabricated. This stuff shows up in some of the raw mainstream video footage. And one of the Fox channels, and at the time it was broadcast over UHF. I can't remember if it was a channel number 47 or 48, but it had Fox News logo in the corner of the picture, and a disc came from behind the building. I've talked about it before for many years, and people have said, oh, you discredit the whole 9/11 movement if you talk about that. No, you don't. No, you don't, because they used a lot of trick photography. We saw holograms in the form of video that were in the video feeds. We've talked about that on recent shows. Again, I talked about that on Drew Rain's show just yesterday, how the plane is shown in slow motion going into the building, yet the building suffers no damage. And at one point, the left wing of the plane actually disappears. And then you can see it slowly reappearing and going into the building. And again, the building suffers no damage. Pretty much until about the whole plane, maybe with the exception of the tail, is represented as being inside the building. And then you see an explosion. Okay. We've seen those videos many times. And, There's a really good 9/11 video called September Clues that came out, and I think it was three or four parts. It analyzed what we were actually seeing. There's something on the order of a plasma ball that actually looks like what caused the explosion. And you can tell that the alignment and the trajectory of the plane and the angles and how the plane enters the building and exits the building is all fraudulent. It's replete with errors, including blackouts of the actual video frames that all the networks seem to get a shot of. Very interesting. They all have the same blackout. And that means they're using film.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And it's quite ironic how someone was able to just get up at a level of close to 85 stories high in another part of Manhattan and be ready to shoot that plane coming in. You know, at anywhere from 500 to 600 miles per hour, as they claimed.
Right.
It's even the audio is phony. I can tell you that.
Hey, Don. Klaatu Barada Nikto.
Oh, yeah, that's Michael Rennie's line. In case something happens to him, Patricia Neal is supposed to tell his robot that. That's from the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. So remember that phrase, folks. Klaatu Barada Nikto.
Call off your gort.
Yes. All right. Well, Mike, thank you for being on the show. I've got to say goodnight to the audience.
Goodnight.
And we'll talk to you another time. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's special guest, Dr. Michael Castle. Special thanks also go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network and, again, all of our stations and listeners that wanted to pass on some links. To what I haven't looked at all of them, so I'm going to have a ball with this. But some excellent pictures, excellent videos showing, again, that what is not happening, according to the government, is happening, and everybody sees it. We're not stupid. In fact, to imply that we are, I think, shows how stupid you are. So, with that, I wish all those who've been listening in on Wind Talkers a great night. And over at BBS Radio, I want to thank Don Newsom on the sound tonight, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, most of all you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Please tune in tomorrow night. My special guest will be herbalist, historian, environmental scientist, and musician, Michael Anthony. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.